And we are, as a people, inherently and historically,
wake up,
opposed to secret societies, the secret oath, and the secret proceedings.
The show that asks questions about why we don't ask questions.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Welcome to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. I am Alan Park. These are Conspiracy Queries. My guest this week is Joel Chipkar, and he is a very knowledgeable practitioner of Falun Dafa, Falun Gong, as well. It's the same thing. This is a meditation practice, of which there are many in the world, but this particular meditation practice is regarded by many to have absolutely wonderful results. As long as you don't count getting killed by the government as a wonderful result. But it is a result nonetheless. Yes, that's what happens to a lot of practitioners of this technique in China. That's right. In China, you're not allowed to practice this kind of meditation. Perhaps there are other kinds of meditation you are also not allowed to practice. I don't know. I'll have to ask Joel when he comes on. But before that happens, there's a lot going on this week, including the thin end of the wedge when it comes to internet censorship. David Cameron, over there in England, the Prime Minister fella, the current number one England puppet right now. Under his watch, we have got a watch going for the internet. And this is a classic elitist move to presumably be solving one problem while creating a much more serious problem. This is from Wired. .co.uk. The British Prime Minister has internet filters that will be about more than just hardcore pornography. That's what they're ushering it in under, to get rid of all that terrible porn that is your right to choose to watch or not watch. And the government's going to help you with that. Now, according to information obtained by the Open Rights Group, the organization which campaigns for digital freedoms has spoken to some of the internet service providers constructing Cameron's content filters. They've discovered that a host of other categories of supposedly objectionable material may also be on the block. As well as pornography, users may automatically be opted in on a violent material, extremist-related content, anorexia and eating disorder websites, suicide-related websites, alcohol and smoking-related websites. But here's what really blows my mind and cannot stand. The list includes blocking web forums and esoteric material, whatever that is. That is ridiculous. What is esoterica? What is esoteric? Well, that's whatever the government decides is something they don't want you to spend your time on. So I will speak up now and give forewarning to hacktivists, be they Anonymous or WikiLeaks or whoever, or some new formation of internet denizens that will not take no for an answer. I urge you, do not let this happen. Turn these clowns upside down. When you're going to make something that is esoteric illegal, you are just leaving the window open wide enough to shut out anything that you want. So that's got to stop. We can't have that at all. As well, let's move on to the continued poisoning of our homeland, land of the natives. And that's what's happening all over the place, from the food we eat, if you can call it food. And if it's in a box, damn near 100% that the food that you're eating coming from a box that has a paragraph of tiny print, multisyllabic jargon under the word ingredients, it's not really food. It's a product. But that's not the kind of pollution I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Alberta tar sands that continues to get insufficient press coverage, the leakages that have been going on for weeks. And pretty soon I hope to be speaking to some experts about that, hopefully next week or the week after. You do have to dig deep to get a lot of the real news when it comes to some quote-unquote energy production. So this week we're going to keep the energy-based complaints to a minimum. And for now, here is an item from miningweekly.com. The father of fracking, George P. Mitchell, has died at the age of 94. George invented fracking. It is the short form for the term hydraulic fracturing. George Phidias Mitchell has left us at the age of 94. The Texan energy billionaire was a petroleum engineer who transformed the natural gas industry by using hydraulic fracturing to extract the fuel out of shale formations. Larry Nichols, a friend of his and energy business cohort, says Mitchell was a true visionary and pioneer, and he leaves a legacy that is spreading worldwide, one that for decades to come will be known as the Shale Revolution. Yes, Mitchell is gone. His casket will be lowered into a much deeper than usual burial plot wherein water and sand and toxic fluids will be blasted at a high pressure without giving any concern as to how this final send-off will affect the other graves in the cemetery or the drinking water of the local citizens. From there, we turn to our guest today, Joel Chipkar. He is a long-term practitioner of the meditative practice known as Falun Dafa or Falun Gong. And he's been doing this for 14 years, and we're going to find out exactly what it is, what it means, and what has happened to those practitioners that reside in China. Hello, Joel Chipkar. How are you today?
Great, Alan. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Can you explain to myself and people in the audience listening what is Falun Gong meditation? And as I recall, it used to be called Falun Gong, and now it's called Falun Dafa. Maybe talk a little bit about the name change.
Right.
And what it is.
Yeah, there is no name change. It's synonymous. Falun Gong, Falun Dafa is the same thing. Falun Dafa means law, wheel of the great law. Falun Gong, the gong is the energy, the exercise, the energy of the practice itself. It's basically a spiritual discipline that helps its practitioners to enlighten, you know, to their spiritual truth. It's the premise of it is a practitioner will assimilate his mind and his body through gentle exercises and also through theory to assimilate his body to what we believe the universal characteristics are, which is Jen Shen Ren, or truthfulness, compassion, and forbearance. Like, we believe every molecule in the universe has this as its essence, this characteristic as its essence. So once a practitioner assimilates his mind and his body to these characteristics, it's a lot easier to enlighten to your spiritual truth.
Okay. You might have left me a little bit in the dirt with some of that explanation, but then again, I'm not a practitioner. What is...
Let me put it this way, Alan. You know, every spiritual discipline, every religion has a goal, right?
Yes.
A goal of, let's say, Christianity is for human beings to reach heaven, right? Goal of Buddhist is to reach consummation. Falun Gong has a goal as well, and its goal is to help people who practice Falun Gong reach enlightenment. It's another word for reaching consummation or ascending to heaven. It's a human being's perfection is to reach their enlightenment. Okay, and in order to do that, you have to purify your body and mind. You know, you got to get rid of things like greed, anger, jealousy, all of these defilements that keep the human being locked in what we believe is like a maze of suffering, right?
Don't tell me what I have to do. I'm angry about you telling me. This is my show.
Exactly, right?
So you have to lose all that.
Those, you know, those kind of short fuses, right? So Falun Gong helped me. I've been practicing this now for almost 14 years. You know, as a personal experience, it helped me better relate to my family members. It helped me to become more of a peaceful person. I always had a mind that was racing from thought to thought to thought. And I remember when I was younger, I said to myself once, looking up at the sky, I said, why can't I find my peace of mind?
Yeah.
And Falun Gong helped me to attain that peace of mind.
Now, had you explored other spiritual practices and disciplines such as yoga or any other kind of Christianity? You mentioned some other religions.
You know what? I'm a bit of an oddball in that respect. I mean, I grew up in Christianity. My mother forced us to go to church, and for me, it was like in one ear and out the other. When I got old enough, I looked at spirituality and religion as, you know, it was just a money-making machine. Everybody had the answer as long as you had the money to pay them.
Right. So that's what
really
I wanted to
do. A spiritual person.
And I wanted to bring that up as well with you. Is it how much does it cost to learn how to do Falun Gong?
Well, that's another thing. You know, when I got into my 30s, I realized that I needed something to kind of balance my hectic life, and I started to look into meditations, and I started to look into other things, and I realized that, you know what, everybody wants money, and I always had this premise in my soul. I kind of felt that true spirituality, like the true way, would be free. Everyone could practice it, and nobody would come to your door looking for money, and Falun Gong was just like that. I've been practicing again for 14 years, and nobody has ever asked me for a dime. Nobody has ever asked me what my name was. I just felt that I was free to come, free to go. I would go to practice sites, and they would teach me the exercises absolutely free. And I would be actually astonished. I would be waiting for like the plate to come around, and it never came around. Right. So that really, created some bonus points in my eyes for Falun Gong.
So it's not a money grab, obviously.
Right.
Where did the funds come from to print leaflets and maintain a website that's very extensive, by the way?
Volunteers. You know what? We'll kind of split the two because I know that we're going to start talking about the persecution in a couple minutes, but the practice of Falun Gong itself is... it's on the website for free. You can download all the information. You can learn the exercises. You can come to practice sites all over, you know, Canada or the United States or Asia or Europe, absolutely free of charge, and people will teach you. Any of the pamphlets that you see or the flyers or the website, all voluntarily done. I myself in the past have helped to print flyers because I just wanted to give them out to my friends and family and people in my community to give them an opportunity to see what this was, right? So, again, it's actually against the principles of Falun Gong to charge money and to take money or donations from people.
Right. Okay. Now tell me a little bit about... you're spiritually cleansing and you're also physically cleansing. So is there something in or about Falun Gong that leads you to change what you put inside your body on a regular basis?
No. You're free to do anything you want, basically, within the principles. The only thing that Falun Gong, asks practitioners to consider is don't drink alcohol, don't smoke cigarettes.
No booze.
No booze, no smokes.
No smokes.
So, I mean, there's premises behind those. I mean, everyone knows that smoking is bad for you. So, of course, that's a given, right? The alcohol, it's been used in, times to bring down societies, right? I mean, it's obvious it's an addiction. It makes the mind confused a little bit at times. Falun Gong helps to purify and strengthen the main consciousness. So there's no states of trance, there's no visualization, there's no mantras, there's no worship to a certain god. It's basically just solid, clear consciousness. So we know we're the ones doing the exercises, and in the end, we will be the ones who benefit from that.
So this is not an exclusive thing. Like, you could be a Christian practitioner, a Jewish practitioner, a Muslim practitioner. It doesn't interfere.
It doesn't interfere in the beginning, but there are principles in every religion and spiritual practice as well that basically states, you know what, you shouldn't put your foot in two boats. If you want to learn Christianity, try Christianity, see how far you get. If you feel you've enlightened in it and you're ready to move on, then you can try something else. But if you do two things at the same time, they may interfere with each other.
So on some levels, do you get or do you know others that experience resistance or let's say a modified attack from a Christian or other spiritual religious institutions? Do they say, well, you shouldn't be doing – I could just see Pat Robertson sitting down, answering letters on that dopey segment that he has, chastising this as a way of Satan if it's leading you away from Christianity.
Yeah, well, you know what? Every religion has their ways to protect their flock, right? They don't want their members going other places for obvious reasons. But Falun Gong doesn't. Actually, to tell you the truth, I learned more about Christianity and the respect for Christianity learning Falun Gong than I did when I was an actual Christian in my youth.
Wow.
So it's very open, doesn't badmouth anybody, doesn't attack anyone. Again, the principles are truthfulness, compassion, and forbearance. So, you know, you can draw the line.
Right. And I did mention Satan earlier, and I just want to say to my listeners, we were going to have Satan on the show in the next couple of weeks, but apparently the conservatives are on summer holiday, and they're very hard, very hard to get a hold of. We'll have to schedule that later on. Tell me about your physical state before and after learning. Let's just focus on the physical state. I mean, because I want to compare it to yoga or some other regular physical discipline. There is physicality involved.
They're two different things. I mean, yoga, you can – let me put it to you this way. Before I learned Falun Gong, I was a stress bucket, right? I was always stressed out, and, you know, anybody could push my buttons quite easily, right? The first time I went to a Falun Gong exercise site and I learned the exercises, I felt fantastic. It was almost like the energy stayed with me for a prolonged period of time. That night after I left the exercise, I was driving home on the highway, and, like, you know, true to form, someone cut me off. And instead of losing my mind, instead of losing, you know, and started swearing, just kind of automatically, I stopped and I thought, oh, hold on a second, truth, compassion, tolerance. Right, and I stopped. I didn't react to that situation, whereas before I would have reacted for sure. Mm-hmm. And that was really interesting to me because I just was doing the exercises, but the level of energy is called a gong energy as opposed to a chi energy. And the gong energy is a lot more powerful, and it's more sustained. It stays with you because you work for it. It's not like a chi energy where if you go for a massage, you feel fantastic, but you get home and your wife or your husband says something to you that drives you over the edge and you lose your mind, right? The gong energy stays with you, so it's able to help you remain more calm during our inevitable tribulations in life.
Well, isn't there such a practice as qi gong?
Yeah, that's so basically the ancient form of qigong was more pure, but qigong nowadays has become more of a healing and fitness, and again, it's a money-making system as well, right? So it's kind of lost its essence.
It's lost its way.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by your emblem, which would alarm some people who don't look too much into this. It is what appears to be the reverse of the swastika, made famous in Germany back in their war days and persecution of Jews. Can you tell us about that, and do you ever have any kind of resistance?
We used to in the beginning. I mean, Falun Gong now has been practiced since 1994 in I think, 114 countries around the world. It's translated into, I think, 30 different languages at this point, practiced by millions of people, right? So it's become more known, more accepted. The Falun, it's called a Falun, or swastika. You know, Hitler was very esoteric. He believed in the black magic, right? So this, for lack of a better word, swastika, has been seen in ancient Buddhism for 5,000 years. You can see it if you go to the ancient shrines and ancient caves where they would have these swastikas on the foreheads of the Buddha. On the cave walls, it was a symbol of prosperity, but also a symbol of purity. Hitler, of course, took this powerful symbol, he turned it around and painted it black.
Right, that's all it is. It's just an inverse.
It's an inverse of the pure symbol and painted black. So he used it for evil means.
Okay, well, we're speaking with Joel Chipkar, who is I'm going to say an expert. He knows more than I know about Falun Dafa, Falun Gong meditation, and we will be right back. My interview with Joel Chipkar is about China, so it's kind of part of Meet the New Owners. So let's get the theme music up. Oh, it's already up? All right. I don't know. And the Canadian anthem is what it is, as thematically reinterpreted by Canadian musician Bob Wiseman. Yes, China does have control over Canada's oil production industry, and because that's the case, our government would prefer that we keep any negative news about China, of which there is plenty, as quiet as possible. But that's not what this show is about. I think it's important that we not pretend China is the wonderful place that you might see pictures of in a travel agency. While it does reflect those values, it is also the home of many strange things, other things, such as cancer villages. What is that you say, a cancer village? No, I didn't say a cancer village. I would never say a cancer village when it's true that what I did say was cancer villages plural, as in at least 400 cancer villages and climbing. Well, if there are that many of them, I guess we had better find out what they are. Unable to learn much in the Canadian press on the topic of cancer villages, yet again I have to turn to the foreign press, surprise, surprise. So here we go to Quartz.com for this story. China's growth at all costs, quote-unquote, approach to development has meant industries can spew waste pretty much wherever they want. Drinking water sources? Sure. Farmland? Fine. That approach has poisoned entire towns, sending cancer rates soaring. There are now so many that they've earned their own moniker of cancer villages. Conservative estimates have found more than 100 of them in China, but the number of cancer villages could be as high as 400, though, say recent reports. At least the government is now acknowledging their existence. This admission came in its newly unveiled plan to curb the release of toxic chemicals, a major move considering these matters pose potential threats to its stability. China's water pollution is visibly rampant. Investigative journalist Deng Fei recently launched a top trending campaign on Sina Weibo, inviting users to upload photos of their hometown rivers. And you can't believe the horrendous photographs that are uploaded here. Of course, trash is the least worrisome problem. In a survey of 40,000 chemical and petrochemical plants, 23% of hazardous plants were within 5 kilometers or 3 miles, for the international listener, upstream of drinking water sources. Upstream of drinking water sources, reports the South China Morning Post. It's already costing China a lot. Speaking with Britain's The Telegraph, Deng said, if the issue of groundwater pollution is not properly solved, not only will it kill people, but it will also drag down the entire healthcare system because of the number of cancer patients it causes. And now this from Marketplace.org. It says China's toxic harvest growing tainted food in the cancer villages. So it's not bad enough that stuff is flowing by. They're actually planting stuff. The hill of chemical waste beside farmer Wu Shulang's rice paddy began to take shape in the 90s. It was yellow and green, and it smelled terrible, says Wu, standing on the edge of his rice paddy in rural Yunnan in the southwest of China. The waste was from a factory next door, but he was growing stuff in it anyway. It's a byproduct from making chemicals used for tanning leather. Each day for 20 years, workers dumped more of it, making the hill bigger and bigger. Last year, an estimated 300 million pounds of chemical sludge towered over his land and the river below. Whenever it rained, our rice paddy in the river would suddenly turn bright yellow. Much of my rice died. It killed everything in its path. But not all the rice, because then they would still market whatever was left there, and people eat that. This is what's going on in China. So let's go back to our interview with Joel. Okay, Joel, we can keep talking. So that's what Hitler did with the symbol. So you're trying to claim it back. But do you ever come up in a conversation and people say, hey, you guys have a swastika there. What's that all about?
No, not really. Not anymore. In the beginning we did, but again, it's many, many people know that it's a symbol that has its place in history for 5,000 years, right?
Right. Okay, so you are able to have compassion and understanding. So this is, we could say, Falun Gong is great for reversing the phenomenon known as road rage.
Well, you know, it's again, Falun Gong is a profound discipline, right? And like any kind of discipline or religion, it's a path, right? So people are on this path. And it takes time to learn the path. Just because I've been doing it for 14 years doesn't mean I'm Buddha. It doesn't mean, you know, I've enlightened or I've transcended. Every day we go through tribulations that press our buttons, and we have a choice of how we want to react or act to those. And Falun Gong just gives you some tools to make, you know, different choices.
Okay. This road to enlightenment, are you... You say you're not there yet, and it's a journey. Are you intellectually aware, at least, of what enlightenment is from the perspective of a Falun Gong practitioner?
Well, from the perspective of Falun Gong, and from the perspective of other teachings as well, you know, the end result, the goal of every human being is to ascend back to where we come from. Like, Falun Gong believes that every human is actually a god that has fallen here, and our goal is to get back to where we come from. So you have Jesus who came down to teach the way so people can get back to heaven. You have the Buddha who came to teach people how to reach enlightenment and gain consummation, right? Falun Gong helps people to enlighten to their path so they as well can get back to their to where they come from. So, you know, this is the premise of all of the orthodox religions, and that, in a nutshell, is what true enlightenment
is about. And have you met someone well-developed in the practice who you would consider to be, for lack of a better term, more enlightened than you as a result of practicing?
You know what? At times. I mean, at times I'm enlightened, and then the next day I'm not. I mean, it's not like, it's not like you can, you know, you paint yourself golden and walk down the street, right? Like,
yeah, it's not a vacation destination.
That's right. It's the journey, right? So, of course, on the journey, we all face tribulations on a daily basis, and these are tests, right? And they help us to choose the right path.
All right. Where do you find yourself with this practice and journey? Where do you position yourself, or how do you take in, I'll just call it loosely, the nonsense of the world, politics, things that you don't agree with, things that go on and could or may affect your life in other ways that maybe, I mean, I know you're going to tell me that this practice helps you better react or not react to those provocations and injustices, but how do you now look at things that used to bother you on a not just in a traffic sense, but in a political sense?
Well, one of the main teachings of Falun Gong is not to get involved in politics, and this is one of the propaganda tools used by the Chinese government to kind of paint Falun Gong as being bad, is for somehow they got political and started to challenge the Chinese government. Well, that's nothing more than a lie. It says right in the teachings that politics is a dirty business. It's based mostly on selfishness and don't get involved. So on a principle, that's what we follow. But like on a community sense, you know, if something's going on in my community, I can get involved. If I vote, you know, like there's certain you know, things that as a human being you want to give to your, you give back to your community. You want to make sure things on this level are, you know, going fine. It's like, you know, Falun Gong also teaches you just don't go up to a mountain to cultivate until you reach consummation. You have to be responsible in society. You have to take care of your family. You have to work hard and be a good person.
All right. Well, that's a good piece of advice. Everybody listening could stand to be a good person. So this practice started inside China, that's right?
Started inside China in 1992, and at that time, it was actually supported, awarded, and endorsed by the Chinese Communist Party. They supported the founder to give his teachings all over China. The Public Security Bureau, which is like the CIA or the FBI, awarded Falun Gong for bringing back the crime-fighting virtues into society. There were news reports about how Falun Gong had saved the country millions of dollars in health care costs because the people who were practicing it, mostly elderly people, were becoming more healthy, right?
Hmm. And that's documented.
It's documented. New York Times and U.S. World News had documented that coming from Premier Zhu Rongji at the time. He was the premier at the time. So, and this is back in 1997, 1998.
So those were the good days.
It was highly supported, awarded. You had high-ranked members of the Communist Party practicing it, their family members practicing it. It spread faster than any spiritual discipline in China's history.
And there are other, speaking to someone who's a bit ignorant on a lot of these levels right now, Joel, but there are a lot of other religious and spiritual practices that do go on there.
Well, this is the issue, Alan. This is what happened. Is like, yes, you do have, Buddhism there, you have Christianity there, you have the Catholics there, you have Judaism there, you have Hinduism. All kinds of things happen at Qigong. Everything is in China. But in order to have your spiritual faith, you must swear allegiance to the Communist Party over your belief in your chosen God. You have to put the Communist Party first. You have to be controlled by the Communist Party. And this was the problem
the clash inside China. With this, Falun Gong's directives specifically say no to that.
Well, no, not at all. What happened was the Communist Party approached the founder, and they said at the time, listen, this is really, you know, taken off. We want to control it, and we want to start charging money for it. And the founder said no. And he ended up pulling away from the China Qigong Research Society. That was the arm of the Communist Party that was, you know, controlling all of the Qigong and Tai Chi and the spiritual disciplines in China. He pulled away from that. And at that point, that was in 1994, at that point, the Communist Party started to attack Falun Gong.
And even while some of the practitioners were Communist Party members.
Oh, yeah. The police, Communist Party members, like high-ranked people. Right. So what happened was the abuse and the, you know, the attacks continued to escalate until 1999 when practitioners were arrested in a nearby town. They were put into jails because they went to appeal to a local newspaper who wrote a really bad article about Falun Gong in the newspaper, edged on by Communist Party members, right? So they went to appeal. They got thrown in jail. Practitioners came to help clarify the truth to get them out of jail, but the jail wouldn't let them out. So word got out, and then people went to Zhongnanhai, which was the government compound in Beijing, to finally appeal for Falun Gong's constitutional rights to practice their faith without being harassed. Right?
But they are so that begins the chapter in Falun Gong history of imprisoning the practitioners.
It's close. We're getting there.
Okay. So basically, people that did not want to submit first to the Communist Party. That's where the tea card got upset. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's where it got upset. And then, of course, the abuse and the, like, practitioners would be in the parks doing their exercises, maybe 100, 200 strong, and then a Communist Party vehicle would come by with a water cannon and just blast them all.
Wow.
Or they'd come by with a truck that would be blaring loud music and just disrupt everybody.
Right.
And this was happening for years. So practitioners basically decided, listen, you know what, let's appeal for our rights to practice our faith in peace, which is in the Chinese Constitution, right?
Wow.
But so they went to appeal for their beliefs. They 10,000 practitioners gathered outside of the Beijing compound, where they were met by the premier at the time, Zhu Rongji, who I discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
A few of the spokespeople were led into the government compound. They had a meeting for about 2 hours, and Zhu Rongji agreed that, hey, you know what? Don't worry about it. We'll give you guys your freedom to believe. Sorry for whatever happened. I'll get to the bottom of it, and rest assured, we'll take care of it. So all 10,000 people went home, and that was it.
Do you feel that he was sincere when he said these things?
He was very sincere. The issue was that the very next day, the president of China, his name was Jiang Zemin, he ordered an urgent meeting where he lambasted Zhu Rongji for taking sides with Falun Gong. And at that point in time, he had made the decision to use Falun Gong as a political target to basically get other Communist Party members to see that he was a strong leader and that, you know, if you crossed him, this is what could happen to you. So he basically used Falun Gong as a tool, and on July 20th, 1999, he ordered the elimination of Falun Gong inside China.
And at that time, and this is like 10 years after the famous tank protests in Tiananmen Square.
Yeah.
So we know they can play hardball.
Yeah.
So 10 years later, this happens. At that point, how many people would you estimate or guesstimate, if necessary, were practitioners of Falun Gong in China?
Okay, based on Chinese government surveys and based on them being reported in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, 70 to 100 million practitioners.
70 to 100 million practitioners is the number I'm getting now from Joel That's incredible. Just think about how large. That's like two Canadas or more.
Three times the population of Canada.
Three,
yeah.
Well, if you go with 100, yeah, it's about three times the population. Okay, so just think on that for a second, and we'll be right back. Just a quick reminder here that you can offer feedback by going to the website conspiracyqueries.com or reaching us on Twitter at @con_queries at Twitter. All right, given the conditions we're hearing about, it should come as no surprise that over 600 people, I would think it would be more, have offered their services to get the hell out of China, probably forever. Yeah, I just don't understand why that number is so low. But according to NTD.tv, a Chinese website, Dutch entrepreneur Bas Landorp has a long-cherished hope to send people to Mars. His Mars One project plans to establish a permanent human colony on Mars. The project was launched in Shanghai, and there are already more than 600 people lining up to go. It's really my dream, my ambition, to take humans to Mars, and this is just the only way. Two men and women will be chosen for the colony, but today's technology can't guarantee a return trip. But that doesn't stop Chinese people from wanting to get on that flight as soon as possible. Because as we're about to find out, much denial of the organ harvesting that goes on in China, and much of that to do with Falun Dafa and its family and friends. A reporter has won an award for exposing the forced organ harvesting in China. This is also on NTD.tv. And he has won an award from the Society of Professional Journalists, which, reading the newspapers these days, can only number in the tens, for a series of articles he wrote on China's murky transplant system. His name is Matthew Robertson. He's a China specialist for the English edition of the Epoch Times newspaper. He's fluent in Mandarin and was able to do more investigative research from Chinese websites than most English reporters. But even without a language barrier, the lack of reliable information made it difficult. But he triumphed and stuck with it and has in fact won a journalism award. So that's what's happening in China. All right, let's bring Joel back on. Let's say 100 million people are practitioners of Falun Dafa. This is in 1999 when the hammer came down. How were people rounded up and arrested?
Well, let me kind of give you the scope of the persecution first, so you
Absolutely.
Can kind of get an idea of that. The government mobilized basically all of Chinese society, from media to the police, from education to the judiciary. They used relentless propaganda campaigns, labeling practitioners as obsessed, evil, unbalanced, cult-like members, threats to the nation, quote-unquote political. They also created an extra legal police force called the 610 Office, which hunted, arrests, and detains Falun Gong practitioners without trial in re-education camps throughout China.
Without trial.
Without trial. Whereas United Nations estimates that two-thirds of the inmates now in Chinese labor camps are Falun Gong practitioners, right? Those who are brought to trial have seen their lawyers stripped of their legal license or imprisoned. Over 100 million people now in China are in exile today, right? Hundreds of thousands are in labor camps, and thousands have been killed in police custody, to the point where in 2008 the United Nations stated that we are concerned that the reports of arrests, torture, sexual violence, deaths, and unfair trials of Falun Gong practitioners may reflect a deliberate policy to target Falun Gong. The cruelty and brutality of these alleged acts of torture defy description.
You know, I have to jump in here and say that if this is what is the result of practicing Falun Gong, that I have so much awe. I won't quite say respect because I don't know enough about it yet, but I have a certain high measure of awe towards the practitioners because, you know, earlier you stated that you don't get involved in politics and it's, you know, dirty work and et cetera. But for someone to stick with the choice between, you know, dropping out, can we say, of the practice, or staying true to yourself and your path and experience this kind of persecution is incredible to me. And that just astounds me because, you know, why why choose to stay in there? I mean, obviously there's something about it where and we were talking earlier about road rage and, you know, getting over your reactions to things. Man, you have got to have some kind of awarenesses and enlightenment to some level put together where I'm sure these people are still practicing some measure of Falun Gong as much as they can while being in prison, while being persecuted, and they stay on that side of the fence.
They do, and basically, you know, I've thought the same thing myself, and, you know, being in Canada and, you know, being able to practice freely, even though I see the reports, the death reports and the torture reports come through my desk every day, I can't imagine what it's like to live under that kind of pressure inside China. And, you know, from my point of view, when someone asks me that, I basically say, what are you supposed to do, right, when those with all the power are attacking those with none?
Right.
Right? You stand up. You stand up and tell the truth, right? And this is what Falun Gong practitioners are doing. Like, today the Communist Party is responsible for terrible crimes against humanity. And these practitioners are selflessly trying just to awaken people to support the cause, not for themselves or to get you to join the practice, but to help save others.
Well, that doesn't stop Canada from being able to broker all kinds of huge number business deals with them.
Yes, and, well, you know what? I have to hand it to the government, though. Like, we've had a couple of resolutions passed unanimously to call on China to stop the persecution of Falun Gong. We've had, I mean, you know, a lot. We have a Friends of Falun Gong organization inside the Parliament Hill there, where, you know, members of the Parliament have joined to help support Falun Gong. I mean, the Prime Minister gives us greetings for Falun Dafa Day. I know that they've brought up behind closed doors the persecution of Falun Gong, but of course, much, much more must be done to stop this from happening.
And when you say to stop this from happening, let's cut to the chase here. What kind of things are happening to these practitioners? While and remember, everyone, we're talking about, you know, 100 million practitioners, many of which are imprisoned and without trial, without representation, etc. What's going on there?
Let me just get right down to the most horrific atrocity that we've found. In 2006, an investigation led by award-winning human rights lawyer and Nobel Peace Prize nominee Mr. David Matus, along with former Canadian Secretary of State for Asia-Pacific David Kilgore, brought forth chilling evidence that over 41,500 Falun Gong practitioners were killed so their organs could be sold to transplant patients for up to $160,000 U.S. So you're talking about, from what we know, over 41,000 practitioners who were killed, and while they're still alive, their organs are ripped out of their bodies to be sold by state-run hospitals on state-run websites to transplant tourists.
And how to tourists?
Transplant tourists, people coming from other countries looking for organs. They had, I saw these websites as well. State-run hospitals had websites that stated right on the website, I couldn't believe it, that we can guarantee that we will have an organ for you when you come to China. If that organ does not take, we guarantee to have another one for you within 2 weeks.
Where can I find that website?
Oh, they've taken that down probably 2 years ago now.
Incredible.
But so we have captions of it, freeze frame captions of it. This is Chinese and English because they're. You know, advertising to Western people as well. But how long do you have to wait? How long do people have to wait in Canada or the U.S. for a liver or a heart? You're talking years.
So I'm a rich guy. I'm a fairly successful, businessman, and I've decided, or my doctor's decided, that the old liver, the kidneys aren't doing so well, and I can get myself on a waiting list, or I can just pick up a fresh transplant by flying to China and having the procedure done there if I'm paying top dollar.
That's right.
It's basically a farm.
Based on Chinese government-owned statistics, because we know they have the death penalty over there, but based on their statistics, there's a discrepancy in their own records of over 41,000 organ plant transplant donors. And the evidence that this David Kilgore and David Matus gave to the international public was so compelling that in 2008, the United Nations asked the Chinese regime twice to explain the discrepancy in the Communist Party's own records of a missing 41,500 organ transplant donors and to tell the UN where they got the organs from. Both times, the Communist Party refused to answer.
But isn't it true, on that same note, that this kind of activity was already, when I'm talking about this kind of, I'm talking about organ harvesting and selling it to a high bidder. That was already going on in China prior to the clampdown on Falun Gong. And then once the clampdown took place, that number skyrocketed.
It skyrocketed. We have statistics here where it completely skyrocketed after 2003. And see, the issue with Falun Gong practitioners is when they're arrested, if they're out, if they're doing the exercises or they're out, you know, trying to appeal for their rights, if they're arrested and they're thrown in jail, they are reluctant to give their names because they don't want their family members to be incarcerated or attacked. So, you know, you have hundreds of thousands of John and Jane Does inside these jails and labor camps, and the evidence suggests that they are systematically blood tested and to see if they can get their become a match for a certain organ transplant patient.
If I'm hearing you right, you're telling me that a practitioner's family can also be sought out, and they don't necessarily need to be practicing Falun Gong.
No, they can get sought out. They would lose their jobs, they lose their pensions, they lose their housing. They're also thrown in jail. They're abused physically, all in an effort to rid
society,
the practitioner from practicing Falun Gong.
At this point, and this might be a bit morbid, what we've already been discussing, organ harvesting, I don't know how much more morbid we can get, but I have a bit of a theory that a lot of the problems of society, whether it's China or Canada or anywhere, are designed to be there, and that the actual resolution is either ignored or outlawed. Because there is a physical financial benefit to allowing things to continue, and I'm going to ask you: Do you think that they're really trying to eliminate Falun Gong anymore? Whereas once they might have been doing so, but by actually eliminating it, they're going to eliminate the ability to harvest those organs and to sell those parts to the rich from around the world. Would you stop the business of organ profiteering by eliminating Falun Gong?
Well, I'd say yes, but in this situation, I would say no, because number one, the cat's now out of the bag. So that's
Pardon
a good
the pun.
Question because the answer I want to give you came from a Chinese government official himself who actually defected to the West in 2006. And he said that the Chinese Communist Party has always relied on violence, lies, and advocating atheism to maintain its power. They could not understand Falun Gong practitioners' peaceful efforts to protect their freedom of belief. Now they cannot let the international community know what has been done to Falun Gong in China. So it's in the Chinese government's best interest to eliminate the proof. Eliminate Falun Gong practitioners, stop them from discussing this, you know, pressure Western governments to remain silent through trade, right? Pressure Western media to shut up or else lose their contracts in China. Hide the situation because the Communist Party members are responsible for heinous crimes against humanity. And in the future, they will be judged for these crimes. So,
well, that's why I wanted you
to eliminate, to cover up this persecution as much as possible.
That's why I wanted you on the show, because I think the show is about, you know, not enough exposure on certain topics as far as I see it. And I want this out there. It's kind of why I was asking you earlier about, you know, Canada does business with them and they don't really like having these types of things discussed, certainly not on a major media outlet. Such as Sirius XM radio or anywhere else.
We think, Alan, that the key to ending this is awareness, right? So every media report is important. We caution, you know, other organizations to be very careful of where they get their information from, because some of these reporters today are basically just parachute reporters, and they just take information from the Chinese government and they post it as fact because they haven't done their investigation. So they start to spread the propaganda and the lies against Falun Gong, which basically aids in the elimination of these people inside China. So, you know, propaganda has been the number one weapon in every genocide campaign in our history, right? Yeah. From Hitler's elimination of the Jews to the Rwandan massacre to the Bosnian massacre. Propaganda is used to, you know, hide the perpetrators' crimes and brainwash the public to think that these Falun Gong people, these Jewish people, these, you know, Tutsis in Rwanda somehow deserve what is happening to them, so that international community will turn their back on the persecution. This is what we've also seen happening
towards Falun Gong, yeah.
To Falun Gong, based on the Chinese government's incessant billion-dollar propaganda machine.
Wow. They do spend a lot of money trying to make this an evil thing.
Well, you know what? But, I mean, look at the facts. Falun Gong has been practiced all over the world since 1994, not by millions of people. Not one Falun Gong practitioner has ever been arrested.
Outside of China, yeah.
Anywhere else in the world, right?
Right.
Only in China, where media is blocked, international bodies are forbidden to enter. Are these, you know, so-called crimes that Falun Gong practitioners are committing are happening. But they're not happening anywhere else in the world, you know, for the past, 14, 15 years strong.
If I'm looking for an organ myself, and going back to the morbid awareness here, I'm gonna do myself pretty well to get one from to get a liver or a kidney from a Falun Gong practitioner who is clean and doesn't drink and doesn't smoke.
Doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, and you know what? We don't know who they are because they haven't given you the name, so they basically just disappear. Their families don't know where they went. The guards don't know who they were. They're hated in China by the public because of this incessant propaganda that has dehumanized them, so they're not looked at as human beings anymore. So, hey, why don't we kill? Listen to this. This guy's name is Enver Tati. He's a Muslim. He's an Uyghur. He's a surgeon that lived in China, and the Uyghurs are in an autonomous region more in the north. In June 1995, he was working in northwest China, and he was told that he would be performing his first operation outside. So, but when he arrived at the destination, he was shocked to find at least 10 prisoners had been shot in the field by a firing squad. The armed police waved him over and his medical team and directed them to a man lying unconscious on blood-soaked ground. He'd been shot in the right-hand side of the chest but was still alive. Tati told his chief surgeon that this person, he wasn't dead, but the chief surgeon ordered him to remove the man's liver and kidney there and then and to be quick about it. He was also ordered not to give the man any anesthetic.
Wow.
So this is what's been happening to tens of thousands of Falun Gong practitioners inside China today.
Well, this obviously has to end. It's a horrendous practice that still goes on incredibly. I can't get my head around the fact that we do any trade with them. You and I differ on that point, but that's okay.
Oh, no, what? I don't differ on that point at all. I agree with you 100%. I think when trade's on the table, human rights go right out the window.
Yeah. Well, what can we do, Joel, when someone says, and when I say someone, I mean that Chinese officials repeatedly, as Wikipedia says, repeatedly and firmly deny the organ harvesting allegations. Where can you point us to show that that is, in fact, a reality? And in just a minute or two, what can we do to help bring this horrendous practice to an end?
I think, like I said, the awareness is the key. It's like a light bulb turning on into a dark room. Once you turn on the light, the darkness disappears. The more awareness that comes out about this persecution, the faster it's going to end. And in every genocide in our history, it sooner or later comes to a close and those who are responsible will face justice. It's really important for those onlooker, those people who are watching, to choose the right side, right? Because once the test is over, once everybody knows that the persecution was wrong and the Chinese government was evil for doing this, it'll be too late to change sides, right? So I implore people just to get more information and to just remember, you know what, the Chinese government, year after year, they're branded the number one human rights abuser in the world. They're responsible for the murder of 80 million of their own citizens in their 60-year reign. So, like, you Google China denies, and you get over 5 million hits.
Wow.
It doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out, you know, who's right and who's wrong. In my opinion, if China says black, you can bet your life and the life of your children that it's white.
Wow. Joel Chipkar has been speaking with us, representing Falun Dafa, the meditative and spiritual practice. Joel, where can we find out more information about Falun Dafa?
Faluninfo.net, FalunInfo.net. Faluninfo.net is our main website for more information.
Okay, thank you very much for coming on Conspiracy Queries. I appreciate it.
Alan, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Conspiracy Queries with Alan Park. Please offer comments or complaints by emailing conspiracyqueries@gmail.com or on Twitter @con_queries or at our website, conspiracyqueries.com. Thanks for listening.